we present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello, welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Daily Mail website read by Susan Ray.
Several cabinet ministers and MPs are expected in the Rochester and Strood seat in the next 3 days in an attempt to prevent the second embarrassing defeat to UKIP. Douglas Carswell became the first elected UKIP MP last month when he won the Clacton by-election after defecating from the Tories.
Our thanks to Owen Thomas for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and Susan Kalman. And opposite them on my left, Hugo Rifkin and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, whose electioneering has been reckless?
Right, well, this is the by-election. There was an extremely interesting political poll this week by YouGov. I won't bore you with all the sort of detailed statistical breakdown, but basically what it demonstrated is that UKIP draws its support from the 21% of the British people who feel that their whole life is someone else's fault. That's what you're... And what's more, the vast majority of these people said that they had been personally damaged by immigration and that they would definitely have won several Olympic medals by now if it hadn't been for Mo Farah. And the other stat was, of course, not surprisingly, they're nearly all white and they live in predominantly white areas like Rochester, which is the home of Dickens, and they have an MP straight out of the pages of Dickens, sort of half Mr. Gradgrind, half Uriah Heep.
It's such a great name, though, Mark Reckless. It sounds like something a bad teacher does with homework. It's just...
He got into trouble, Reckless, this week, because he appeared to propose repatriation, which meant that UKIP HQ had to dive in pretty quick and issue a correction. Something tells me that the UKIP corrections department, I reckon it's going to be running a 24-hour emergency service. You know, hello, UKIP corrections? Oh, what's he said now? Yeah, no, leave him alone, we'll send a man.
They admitted, didn't they, in the days before the election, that they'd asked their activists not to speak to the media.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, and this is absolutely true, they're just a bit too UKIP-y.
Yeah. Which is one of the world's great euphemisms, isn't it? I mean, how are they going to cope with this Pandora's box when election time comes near? I mean, you know...
Well, the first thing about the by-election is I think they should do away with polling. I think it should be back to the old days where it was a surprise. I'm sick of all this. It should be like the Eurovision Song Contest. Yeah. We should know the answer until it's done, because then people would watch it. Now, you all know what's going to happen, so why bother? The second is the Conservative Party. Let's not forget those cheerful people. They've obviously all been listening to Paul McKenna's I Can Make You Still Be in Government tapes. Because... if you listen, like, they're talking about more defections, but I think it was Michael Gove said, nobody is going to defect. Nobody is going to defect. I think they're all sitting while he's hitting it, nobody is going to defect. We are going to win the by-election, nobody is going to defect. And I enjoy that positive mental attitude that they have, because as far as I know, there are quite a few Conservative MPs who are thinking about potentially defecting.
It's weird, people not doing what Michael Gove says. What an extraordinary thing.
But what I love about the whole defection thing is I think if you look at Mark Reckless, you can get the name determinism of that, that maybe he did it because he was reckless, you know, and that weighed heavily upon him. I like to believe that. And so if you think along those lines, it's quite easy to tell who the other defections are going to be. I reckon Terence Bigot.
Oh, yeah.
And that renowned former chairman of the 1922 committee, the Right Honourable Sir Edmund Pufferbrains.
He described the Tories as BNP light. I don't know what that is. I assume a BNP light is one of those fluorescent ones, makes everything uncomfortably white. I have no idea what it is.
I love Farage's defence of Mark Reckless, because he said it wasn't his fault. He got confused by all the questions which is doesn't bode well.
Not as confused as he was the night of the budget vote in 2010. He'd only been an MP for 2 months, and he was unable to vote, and he has said so himself, because he was too drunk. Yeah.
As confused as a newt.
He was confused.
The reckless position, as we should call it, on repatriation, is sort of fascinating, because he ended up basically saying that he wants to send back immigrants from the EU unless they've come from the EU, which was complicated. So if you're one of those Poles who's from Nigeria, then you should really be worried.
To be fair to Farage, he did clarify the party's position pretty quickly, didn't he, when he said that, you know, no Polish plumber will be sent home till they finish the bathroom.
So I'm trying to think if this includes me now, because I'm a British citizen now, so, I mean, I think UKIP can't deport me, but I'm going to make them wish they could. but here's the good thing. I do still also have my Danish passport, so I could smuggle you all out one by one. This is the news that former Conservative MP Mark Reckless has reclaimed his seat in the Rochester and Strood by-election and is now UKIP's second MP. UKIP now has 2 MPs, 24 MEPs and 147 local councillors, bringing its total IQ count up to 5. So 2 points to Andy. Susan, who's giving immigrants the doubt of the benefits?
This is Ed Miliband and his new immigration policy. Now, having watched PMQs, he has the look of a man who got a job as a male stripper by a telephone interview and has just been booked for his first proper hen night. He looks terrified that he's going to be found out, essentially. And what he's done, it's very important when you listen to this story, ladies and gentlemen, you know that it's purely coincidence that they are changing their immigration policy. It's not because of UKIP. It's very important that you all know that they're not going to try and out UKIP. It's simply coincidence that the Labour Party are changing their immigration policy. It's nothing to do with UKIP at all. But they're changing their immigration policy to be more like UKIP. And it's just coincidence. He sent Yvette Cooper out to say that they were going to be changing their policy, and they're going to do things like count everyone in and out again and have more officers and stuff like that.
But the bit I didn't understand, they're going to introduce a new £10 UK visa charge on tourists from 55 countries to fund 1,000 new border guards who will be needed to process the new £10 visa charge, which is being introduced to fund 1,000 new border guards.
It's a bit of a shame. One of my concerns about politics these days is I used to know what people's policies were and used to go, I'll vote for them because I know what their policies are. Now you wake up in the morning and everyone's policies are kind of merging into one another. Not as a result of UKIP, though. It's very important that we all know it's not. None of this is about UKIP.
Do you think now that Nigel Farage will feel he's got to try and outdo Labour by at the same time eating a bacon sandwich and being shouted at by Mylene Klass? Labour Shadow Ministers Yvette Cooper and Rachel Reeves have made speeches this week pointing to the party's tougher stance on immigration. Yvette Cooper accused UKIP and the Tories of entering into an arms race of rhetoric. The most famous arms race of rhetoric started after World War II. The US started by developing metaphor, then the Russians countered with synecdoche. So the US developed parataxis, and pretty soon it all ended in mutually assured hyperbole. You're listening to Radio 4. 2 points to Susan. Jeremy, who's not going to let a little rain shut him up?
We're talking about reigning as in monarchical reigning.
We are.
Prince Charles just wants to be a normal guy and ride around on a scooter with Gregory Peck. no, he said... He's planning to be, you know, very much... interventionist, shall we say. He says he's got his finger on the pulse of public opinion because every so often he summons Jonathan Dimbleby or one of his other toadies and says, how much do my people adore me? Oh, very much, Your Royal Highness. Your homeopathic flapjacks retail at 7 guineas apiece. But in fairness to him, he is passionate about the environment because he owns quite a lot of it. Basically, he's reckoning to be king, which is why the Queen is going nowhere. That woman is taking care of herself. She's so full of antioxidants, she can cure rust by looking at it. But I blame her. I mean, it's clearly nature. It's not nurture. They don't really do nurture in the royal family. So it's clearly a genetic issue with him, which is not a surprise, because you look at their family tree. I mean, it's kind of a poplar, isn't it? It doesn't... really branch out terribly much. None of them... And actually, their whole claim to the throne is pretty tenuous. I'd like to see the Queen go on, "Who do you think you are?" I really would. Because I wouldn't go on it, because you'd have 10 million people thinking, well, who is he? But, but if the Queen went on, it would be like, "Liz, a bit of a disappointment for you. It turns out that you weren't chosen by God to go on the stamps, and the rightful monarch is actually a Bolton care worker called Brenda Plantagenet."
I think it's not unreasonable for him to have the expectation that he can express his opinions, provided it's not unreasonable for us not to care. But he believes in homeopathy, doesn't he? I mean, he wants power, it seems to me. But if he believes in homeopathy, we don't have to give him real power. We can just give him something with the memory of power, yeah. And that'll be fine.
But like Nick Clegg. Close allies to the Prince of Wales have revealed that he plans to continue making heartfelt interventions in national life once he becomes king. Clarence House made a statement on Charles's behalf, leading to general concerns about trusting a man who has a speaking house. Charles himself declined to comment, which was a first. On the upside, at least these interventions are coming from his heart. Imagine if they came from his brain. So, 2 points to Jeremy, and at the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Susan have got 4 points, but so too have Hugo and Jeremy. We start round two with a cutting from the BBC Good Food website.
Recipe: spicy salmon and lentils. This dish is easy to cook, but made... so funny. Right, OK, sorry. Recipe: spicy salmon and lentils. This dish is easy to cook, but made special... thanks to
Never
the...
Never give her one that says Coco Van, for Christ's sake.
Right, I'm going to have a run at it. I'm going to canter up and have a run at it. Recipe: spicy salmon and lentils. This dish is easy to cook, but made special thanks to the inclusion of salmon and lentils.
And our thanks to Richard Springer for sending us that. Andy, have a listen to this. On tide tenancies and towing the line.
Well, this was another ambush for the government. 17 Tory MPs rebelled in the House. They defied the Chief Whip, Michael Gove, because... Well, I think they just do it because they're bored now. I think they just see him coming, they go, "Quick, hide in the cupboard." I told him I'm going to vote yes, did you? Anyway, it was over the beer tie, the arrangement which many feel gives the breweries an unfair stranglehold over publicans. And it's quite... I did listen to the discussion on the Today programme, and they had someone from the Campaign for Real Ale saying that beer would be cheaper, and they had a representative from the breweries saying that lots of pubs would close and that beer would be more expensive. But I feel instinctively that the camera man must be right, because I cannot conceive of members of Parliament passing legislation that would make beer more expensive.
No.
I just don't see them doing that. Well, it doesn't really affect them, because they've got their own beer. And if you go to the House of Parliament, they've got their own special brewed beers, like Old Delusional.
More pubs are closing down, aren't there? It's not a phenomenal figure of...
Well, what people do, they preload, young
pre-lash.
People, on stuff from shops that's cheap, and then go and stagger around in clothing that's not warm enough, and then are sick on wheelie bins. Then start families in the gutter. And that, if we could just get people into pubs playing traditional pub games like pub bigotry and shove hatred and things like that...
I really love having this is new for us, that we have a local pub, and I love to go. And did you know, and I didn't know this, I've not really been a sort of pub person before, did you know that a meat raffle is a real thing?
Mm. Yeah.
I didn't know. I thought it was one of Russell Brand's pulling techniques. I never...
I have a local pub that I absolutely... It's the most important place in my life. If my wife's listening... Sorry. I adore it. It's the most fantastic place in the world because it's got its own cat. It's got a pub cat.
Traditionally, pubs had parrots, didn't they? Do you remember? I can remember our local...
Are you sure?
Did they?
Yes.
I'm thinking of pirates.
I lived opposite a pub that had a parrot.
Why would you have... What? Okay. Sorry, a parrot?
Yeah. Yes. They had a parrot.
Was... Okay, and for why...
Entertainment purposes.
And also to make sure there's no gas leaks.
Yeah. My friend Guy Jenkin lived next to a pub that had a parrot that only whistled the theme to... it was Colonel Bogey, but couldn't get the last note. So here we go. And we would all be there on tenterhooks, and then at some point in the evening, he would go, and the whole pub would burst into a round of applause.
He's just messing with you.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the entertainment aspect of a parrot.
Yes. You'd not live, Susan.
No, I just...
For the first time since 2010, the government has been defeated on one of its own bills as MPs have voted to allow all pubs to buy their alcohol on the open market. Currently, so-called tied pub landlords have to buy their alcohol directly from the pub owner at inflated prices, a business practice that the bank RBS has labelled promising and worth investigating further. The changes made to pub legislation are going to be a shock to the Slug and Lettuce, or Cameron and Clegg, as they're more commonly known. Two points to Andy. Hugo, why can school children no longer give a textbook response?
Because they don't use textbooks, Sandy. Mm. What's happening is British teachers in lots of countries, but particularly in Britain, are not using textbooks at all, really. In somewhere like Singapore, where this will have excellent marks in the schools, something like 70% of maths teachers use textbooks and similar figures in other subjects, whereas in Britain it's down to sort of 5%, and teachers generally get all their studying materials off the internet. And the government wants teachers to start using textbooks again.
We don't use textbooks in Danish schools at all, actually. What we do is we give children a series of increasingly elaborate murders to solve. I'm going to give an extra point if anybody can tell me who's putting the spark into marking.
France.
Susan was first. Well, how is that?
Apparently, France are going to change their marking policies. So instead of like a tick and a cross, they're going to change it to either coloured coding, so green or amber or red. And also considering putting, I think it was clouds or sunshine next to things instead of a right or wrong. Now, fundamentally, I disagree with this because children need to learn that life is a cruel, cruel thing. And I believe if we protect them, then it's more of a shock. Mm. So, for example, at my school, we had exams from a very early age. And I remember when I was about 7, it was an exam on British seabirds. And I remember very clearly, silently weeping at the front of the class as the teacher said, "You're useless, Calman. You're useless. You don't know about seabirds." And I'm grateful to that teacher because what that teacher essentially told me was that life is a difficult and horrible experience that you have to get through and then you die. I didn't know what a turn was.
What kind of school has an exam on seabirds? Has it held you back, the seabird thing? Have you been on a cruise and somebody's gone, "What the hell is that?" You go, "Don't ask me, don't."
But, you know, the other day I was genuinely at the coast. Somebody said, "What's that bird?" And it all came flooding back, Sandy. Mm. I'm fairly traumatised by it.
Do you know what would cure it? A parrot.
Yeah.
As I understand it, the French sort of did various studies and they decided that their pupils are under too much pressure and that French kids have developed a phobia of failure. But it seems to me logically they're going to have a phobia of failure because they're going to have to study French history.
French President François Hollande's government are to encourage schools to move away from the traditional marking system and instead mark tests with suns and smileys to counter the fear factor intrinsic in their education system. In fairness, it's not even really a smiley face, it's just smiley for France, which basically means less surly. 2 points to Hugo. Andy, whose illuminating trip wasn't fine?
Oh, this was this couple. They went to Blackpool and they stayed in a hotel and they didn't like it. They went on TripAdvisor and said they didn't like it, and then they got fined £100 because the hotel, in the contract, in the small print, which they hadn't read, there was a no bad reviews clause, which I think is a brilliant idea. You know, bad review, £100 fine. A.A. Gill owes me £600. It's a brilliant plan. It's almost like the perfect... As a business enterprise model, it's almost perfect, isn't it? You open a rubbish hotel and then you charge people when they complain. And some of the complaints, one of the complaints I thought was rather priceless, it was that the waiters were drinking Strongbow as they served breakfast. I think that's probably quite... I think that's a pretty good indicator of low staff morale.
Yeah.
When the staff can't face breakfast sober. That's
the worst hotel my partner and I ever stayed in was in a little tiny town called Oshkosh, Nebraska, and it was called the Shady Rest Motel. And it was one of those motels where you drive past and you think, how tired are we? And there was a sign by reception that said, please do not use our towels to clean your gun. Tony and Jan Jenkinson were amazed when they found a so-called £100 fine had been taken off their credit card by the Broadway Hotel in Blackpool after they left an unflattering TripAdvisor review following their stay in August. The Broadway Hotel has since said it will no longer levy the £100 fine following recent customer feedback and the fact that it's probably illegal. Surprisingly, the Broadway is only ranked number 858 out of 894 establishments in Blackpool, although I checked and the other 36 establishments include 5 Portaloos, a prison, and sleeping in the sea. Jeremy, why are we set to go loco about cocoa?
The great chocolate shortage. We are running out of cocoa, which means we're going to have really insipid white chocolate, which is hardly any chocolate at all, whereas sophisticated people have that virile 80% chocolate that just is like a sponge sucking the moisture out of your head. but is nice and dark and bitter. But we're all going to have soppy, milky bars. So there will be a dearth of cocoa and we won't have enough chocolate.
I don't like chocolate at all, so I'm not bothered about it. But here's a marvellous thing. There's a new YouGov service, and so I can see what people who do like chocolate also enjoy. Did you see this? There is a new profiles website.
I'm on it.
Yeah, well, we are all on it. Yeah. You are able to input the name of anybody in public life, and then you can have a look at the breakdown of the demographics of people who also enjoy this person. So, for example, if you're a fan of Top Gear, you most likely enjoy, I don't know, being a pillock. And so this is your fans. OK, so, Jeremy, favourite food of your fans, according to this...
What I've got to guess?
Yeah.
Favourite food, chicken danzak.
It's kedgeri.
Kedgeri's Indian in origin, isn't it?
Well, mine was dal, weirdly, and Andy's was lime pickles. So it's like a meal. There's like a whole meal happening here. Susan, yours is the weirdest of all. It's syllabub. fans of the news quiz, I love this. Hummus. Do you know what yours is, Hugo? The favourite food of your fans is chicken vindaloo, and their favourite brand is Heathrow Airport. Your brand, Jeremy, is Skoda.
I'm fine with that.
Whereas mine's Volvo, rather pleasingly. Yeah. And Andy's, Hamilton's, is Waitrose.
See, we laugh at all this stuff as harmless nonsense, you know, a bit of fun, but they'll give this stuff to marketing people. That's like giving a toddler a Kalashnikov. So suddenly they'll be coming to me saying, we thought you could write a comedy about a man who owns a supermarket. It could be Waitrose, you know, and you sell lots of lime pickle, and then some sad bloke comes in, he's parked his Skoda outside. And...
Can I explain to our American listeners, a toddler with a Kalashnikov is a bad idea?
Experts have have warned that there is likely to be a global cocoa shortage by 2020, and terrifying news for chocolate enthusiasts everywhere. The shortage has been blamed on bad weather, Ebola fears, and Eamon Holmes coming off his diet. Things are so bad that as of next year, a Mars bar will only be able to help you work. 2 points to Jeremy. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they would like to share?
I've got this from Kevin Luff. It's from a news blog. The incident happened in the Nebbi district in the north of the country near the Congolese border. The officer said the tortoise entered his home and attacked him while he was enjoying a post-work cup of tea. I tried to scare it, he said, but the tortoise became very aggressive. I took a stick to chase it, but instead became more violent, he told the paper. After attempting to fend off the tortoise with a plastic chair, he said he instinctively drew his firearm and shot it dead.
I've got one. It's been sent by Carolyn Brown, and it's from the Lymington Times. It's a warning to women over forest flasher. Women out in the New Forest are warned to be on their guard after a naked man appeared in front of a female walker. New Forest Chief Inspector Simon Tribe said, "We ask anyone who witnesses such an incident to make a note of the person's description, including their hairstyle."
Gary Watson from Aberdeen has sent us an ad from Gumtree. You were the tall brunette with the near-perfect body that farted in the bread section last night. I was the tall guy next to you that looked over and asked, "Was that you?" You quickly replied, "No, it wasn't me." You almost seemed insulted, I would ask. As the stink grew, you continued to deny your flatulence, but it was evident. I tried to get rid of the stench by waving two loaves of bread around. You proceed to storm off in an angry manner. You are beautiful. And even if you are a liar and fart like a Clydesdale, I'd love to meet up.
Let's take a look at the final score. Hugo and Jeremy have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Andy and Susan with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from The Times sent to us by Mike Oglesby.
A female student at the University of Newcastle in Australia has been found using university equipment to broadcast live solo sex shows from the library. The university said it was investigating and that the library had been steam cleaned.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Susan Calman, Hugo Rifkind and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toxton, and the news was read by me, Susan Ray. The chair script was written by Lucy Clark, James Budd and John Luke Roberts, with additional material by Max Davis and James Farmer. The producer was Sam Michel.